As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
What kind of football is the person going to play, and I put it in their contract? And secondly, they have to want to be at the club. It mustn't just be some place that their fading managerial career has brought them to. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm your host, Danny Kelly. I'm delighted to say I'm joined again by The Athletic's James Moore and Jack Pitt-Brook. Hello to you both. Hello, James.
Hello.
And hello, Jack.
Hello.
Now, listen, before we get stuck into today's show, which is all about readers' questions, let me just tell you some good news. We've been nominated for an award at the Sports Podcast Awards. It's a huge thing. In order to win the blinking thing, we need your help. So listen carefully if you can. Here's what you have to do. You just have to go to their website and create an account. That's www.sportspodcastgroup.com. So go to the website, create the account. And then when you've done that, and I say it's free and it's easy, click on Best Team Podcast. Some phones just say team. Click vote next to The View from the Lane, and don't accidentally vote for some other rubbish. Then click submit your vote, top right-hand corner of the page. If you go to my Twitter feed, at Danny Kelly Words, I'll keep the instructions, which are much more simple to see written down. I'll keep them pinned at the top of my Twitter feed for the next few weeks until the voting's over, at Danny Kelly Words. Okay, let's do that. Let's make sure we win. And then I'm not humiliated by some yachting podcast or other. Now on with the show. On this episode, as I said, we'll be taking questions from you, the dear listeners, the dear readers, the dear downloaders, whatever you call yourselves. Okay, let's start with your questions then. The first one comes from Michael Perlman, who goes straight in, studs up, and says, "You all are Daniel Levy." Thank you very much for that responsibility, Michael. And he says, "Okay, who are you picking to be the manager next season? The dugout choice is yours, and why?" Jack, I'll throw the hand grenade to you first.
If I was Daniel Levy, I think I would probably go for Mauricio Pochettino on the basis that he's available, he knows the club, he fulfills the football criteria that they want in terms of, you know, bringing Spurs back towards more attacking, proactive football. Also, you know, completely unavoidable in this is the fact that this would be a very popular move with lots and lots of fans. And I'm sure Levy is very conscious of the fact that his stock is pretty low with fans at the moment. You know, it's no, everyone knows this who's been on social media or been to a game recently. So I just think that, I mean, it sounds almost too obvious, the attraction of going for Pochettino, but I think that there are a lot of very strong arguments for it. If I was me, rather than me being Daniel Levy for the day.
If you were you.
Yeah, if I was me, rather than this kind of like being Daniel Levy scenario that Michael...
Are you a hologram now?
I think I might, just out of curiosity, basically try someone new. You know, Roberto Di Zerbi and Ruben Amorim, I think, are probably the two that interest me the most. You know, Amorim's obviously been fantastically successful with Sporting Lisbon. Di Zerbi clearly plays brilliant, brilliant football, which I'd be very curious to see. But then ultimately, it's not my, you know, it's not my football club. It's not my reputation on the line. And I think that Pochettino would be a kind of safer bet than Amorim or Di Zerbi, which is why, you know, as much as I might like to see Di Zerbi or Amorim, out of curiosity, If I was Daniel Levy, I think I'd go for Poch.
What about you, James?
In the name of making this slightly more varied and interesting, I'm gonna pick someone else. I obviously see the benefits of Pochettino, and I think I said the other week, I do worry slightly that it wouldn't work as well second time round, mm-hmm. not just because of the statistics that you provided, but just my sense that he was just slightly further down the road and it might not work quite as well. And also Spurs don't have the same squad that they did at that point. So, you mentioned Sergio Conceição last week.
Yeah, at Porto.
And I watched Porto against Inter on Tuesday evening. And although they like Spurs, went out having drawn 0-0 at home, they actually tried to score a goal.
There the comparison ended, didn't it?
Wow.
They tried. In the last few minutes of the game, they were actually frantically trying to score rather than just like batting the ball around the defence. It was actually quite interesting. It was a different approach. It was quite interesting.
What a novel approach to Champions League.
It was weird. They tried to go through against a sort of decent but not great Italian team. It was odd. And I think we had a question from another reader. I don't think we're going to get to it, but I think it was John D who asked if we could appoint a manager, sign a player from abroad and sign a player from the Premier League. I mean, that I think is Evan Nilsson, the Brazilian forward at Porto. I mean, he looked okay in that game. From what I've seen of him, bits and bobs, he looks really good. He feels like the kind of player, I guess Diaz is the kind of comparison you make, one of the top players. I don't know, they just signed Pedro Porro from Sporting. So that kind of level of player, one of the best players in Portugal. That is the kind of player Spurs should be spending big money on. Another really good attacking player. Wouldn't be a bad little combination. Manager and player. I'd be happy with that. I don't know anything about Sergio Conceição. No. I'm literally saying it, so I'm not saying Pochettino.
No. Sergio Conceição's played fantastic front foot football. Got Porto, I think, to the quarter final. I think three of the last 5 years in the Champions League. Their model is, unlike Benfica and Sporting, has collapsed a little bit. So they've had to do it on a very, very shoestring budget. And he's managed to do fantastically well. My answer to your question, Michael, is simple. I would work backwards from the following two things. What kind of football is the person going to play? And I'd put it in their contract. And secondly, they have to want to be at the club. It mustn't just be some place that their fading managerial career has brought them to, or a stepping stone in their minds to somewhere better. Of course, Pochettino fits in that. He would want to be at Spurs and he will play forward-looking football. Personally, I'd love Poch to come back. I suspect the same as you, James, I can see all the pitfalls. So what you want is somebody who is in Poch's position. When he first came to Spurs, he's made his reputation further down the pyramid, if you like to use that expression, and who is now determined to prove himself at one of the biggest clubs around. So Amorim would fit that perfectly. He's done his brilliant work at Sporting. Obviously, you mentioned De Zerbi as well. Although, he's still working at Brighton. I mean, I don't think if he jumped off there, you'd suspected his loyalty to projects and all the rest of it if he jumped off now. So I would go for a manager who is probably in their earlier stages of their career, even than Pochettino. And so I'm going to come back to it. Ruben Amorim would be a good start for me. But if Poch comes, he fills the other two things. He would want to be there. And he would play attacking football. So that's the answer.
Just to kind of row back on what I said, while you've been talking, I've just remembered Spurs have had three former Porto managers before in AVB, Mourinho and Nuno. So actually, maybe it's not a good idea. I don't know.
Sure. I mean, the Chelsea, Porto, you're probably avoiding those, are you?
Yeah, let's avoid those two. Yeah, so, okay.
So come on down, Mr. Amorim, then. So
none of you have said Luis Enrique.
I thought we scotched that last week or earlier in the week, didn't we? I don't know. Some people seem keen on the idea. I'm less certain.
I think he has a commitment to good football. I just don't know if he would be in it for the long haul. I guess is part of the question. Like, has he proven that he can? I mean, I don't really know that much about his club career in detail. But a lot of his reputation in club football is obviously built on having the best front three ever assembled. So I don't know if he could build something that's like built to last over a three to four year period.
And I think that they qualified brilliantly for the World Cup, but then watching Spain in the World Cup, and of course the tournaments are a weird petri dish of problems for managers. When he didn't have the best, he still has some fantastic players, including the young Barcelona midfielders. Once he didn't have a great strike force, they just looked like any other team. They were playing lovely football. He's a huge name. Would he want to come to Spurs, etc.? I don't know why he keeps coming up, unless he is Paratici's choice and it just gets fed into the...
I believe he is yeah, probably Paratici's favourite choice or one of Paratici's favourite choices.
Okay. Well, you're right to make the point that the director of football's first choice is no one else's first choice, at least not on this podcast. Chad, this is, I mean, obviously, Chad, we could argue about this for the whole podcast, but just a quick one. A discussion, please, on how our current players would fit in a mixture of formations and playing styles that we might expect to see from the new management. Let's say it was Pochettino, for the sake of argument, and we went back to 4-2-3-1, pressing, etc. I guess I know what's behind this, because you could argue that over the last three windows, when Spurs have been pretty busy, they signed players to suit Conte's system. I'm not sure this is hugely pertinent. Matt Doherty is a specialist wing-back. Dan Petrescu, 100 years ago, was a specialist wing-back. I think people can play full-back as well as wing-back. James, of the current players, imagine Poch came back and played. You know, he's played 4-2-3-1 before, let's say, with pressing. Have we got the players to do that?
I mean, he has played that formation, but he has also played with a back three, if you remember, in 16-17, of the large swathes of that season. So I wouldn't say that was necessarily impossible either. But no, if it is 4-2-3-1 for the purposes of this question, which I guess is working out who we keep and who we have to jettison, there is a system change. I mean, I'm assuming you're kind of alluding to Pedro Porro there playing at right back, I guess. Because I think if you have Pedro Porro and Emerson Royale as two of your two right backs in the squad, that, I think that covers you quite nicely in terms of like different approaches. Like Emerson Royale, I think we've said quite a few times, defensively seems to have his wits about him. It's good in 1v1s and whatever else. So
very good, at being the last man to head the ball away for far post crosses. He's very good there.
So you wouldn't be worried about the defensive side of that role at all. And obviously the attacking side, although in Pochettino's team actually did ask a lot of the fullbacks, if you remember, obviously Rose and Walker when they were the two, when they weren't playing with back three. So you'd be pretty well set at right back. I mean, I don't think the problems are that different. You probably want Romero and another centre back. Left back, obviously Udogie coming back, so you assume he would play, but then you have Davies as well, so you've got a similar setup there at left back with an attacking one and a more defensive one, a more conventional defensive one. Midfield options, I don't think that again changes too much. You'd have whether you want to improve on Højbjerg is a different question, but you'd have a Højbjerg and a Bentancur. You've got Skip, Saar, seemingly still Bissouma to work out what you're going to do there. So that doesn't change too much. You've got those space to go in those two positions. A number 10, an attacking creative midfield player, you know we need to sign. So that isn't that different. Your options on the left are the same. Your options on the right are the same. The centre forward, you want the backup. We've got Richarlison to kind of play on the left. I mean, it's not actually massively different when you break it down like that.
I just wonder whether that could Rodrigo Bentancur, assuming that he comes back from his injury, the same player as he was before, is he the attacking creative option? With four at the back, he wouldn't be required to stay so far back in the team. I get the impression that he can beat his man on the edge of the box and he's a good passer. Just a thought.
Quite a few players jump out to me as being players who I would love to see Pochettino coach. You know, Bentancur, certainly. Richarlison, certainly. Romero, obviously. But I'd worry a bit about Kane and Son. I mean, I'd worry about two things. One is Kane and Son, you know, would not, I don't think, be able to press like they did back in the good old days of Pochettino. So I don't know what hypothetically that would mean. And the other is there's no creative players. You know, it's not like in the good old days they had Dele and Eriksen, and now all their creative players are on loan. And I don't want to do yet again, you know, well, would Pochettino bring back Ndombele and Lo Celso? But he might do. You might have to, because there is no one else in that team who can create chances. Maybe I'd be curious to see what he could do with Kulusevski, because Kulusevski is such a kind of distinctive, specific player. I wonder how he'd fit in with Pochettino. I think he'd have a lot of running to do.
He wouldn't press either, I don't think, really. Kulusevski, I don't
see
as like an aggressive.
He's so young, Kulusevski. Yeah, maybe. I mean, like he's very physical, Kulusevski. I think I'd be curious to see how he could adapt. But yeah, it's. I think it would take a fair bit of surgery.
I mean, would
making the squad Pochettino ready?
Maybe you're right. I think we were very briefly going to see it against Milan until the red card. Kane is the number 10 or playing off of Richarlison. Was that the game that was going to happen? I've remembered that completely wrong. It's only been a week. That was going to happen. It looked like it was going to happen, didn't it?
That was the first half against Chelsea, wasn't it? It was Kane. Richarlison played up front and Kane spent a lot of time kind of dropping into the number 10 space to play balls over the top to Richarlison.
But either way, like in a 4-2-3-1 with Kane as the sort of attacking midfield player, Kane is the number 10.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Who knows? It's kind of been a thing that's been talked about a lot, but we've never really seen it for any great period of time.
Also, I mean, it has been talked about a lot. I've talked about it on occasion. There's a part of me, though, where the red light is flashing in front of my eyes saying, hang on, you're going to take Kane at the position which he currently plays. Just think about the implications of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that's true.
He does some pretty good things in that position. I wouldn't be so keen to just change him.
But what I would say is a lot of the goal two scores in the penalty area, particularly this season, have been from set pieces.
The other point to make on this is that Pochettino always wanted Kane to play up front. Pochettino was really, really clear. Like, Kane was his number nine. It was all, you know, he really wanted to make the most of Kane's physicality. And Kane's evolution into more of a 10 has more or less come since Pochettino's gone. You know, it's made big strides in that direction under Jose and then increasingly so under Conte as well. So let's not, I don't think it's... Again, it would force another kind of rethink about Kane's best position if Pochettino were to come back, because if it was the Kane of 2015, then obviously you'd want him as a nine, but the Kane of 2023 is a different player, so I don't know.
And exactly. So whether the new manager is Pochettino, De Zerbi, Chris Wilder, all of them will know that's what Harry Kane does, and presumably he'll still be there. We'll come on to that question a little later. Then you have to build around that. You don't, you know, they're not fools, these people. Presumably they've got enough people with clipboards and computers to tell them 5 years ago is gone. This is what he's doing now. Nathan Stum has asked this question. If you could go back and sign one player that we were linked with in the past, who would it be and how would it have changed the trajectory of the club? But he's talking about transformative signings. The problem, Nathan, with the question, and I'm looking at my colleagues here, is that we've been linked with so many players that you can almost say anything here. I'll jump in here. And this is only because, and you know, a lot of people will say this was definitely down to Daniel Levy not prepared to go the extra 5 million, whatever it was, just because he's so much my favourite footballer, man, after Mitrovic, who doesn't play Spurs. Jack Grealish. Spurs were on the cusp of getting Jack Grealish for, I think, £25-28 million 2.5 seasons ago. And
it was 2018.
Yeah, okay, so quite a while ago. Yeah, quite a while ago. I think we wouldn't be talking about replacing Eriksen. I know he looks like his best position is wide left, but I think he could easily play behind Kane. I think they would have been an alternative to the ball around the corner to Son. And I think he holds the ball long enough that, you know, even with a defensive team, he helps you get the ball up the pitch. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's a bit of an idiot and occasionally a git, but he's a fantastic player. When he was doing his thing, at Aston Villa as a younger player, you could just see Spurs' shirt on him. I could just see it, and they didn't get him. It's taken him a year to settle down at Manchester City, but he's very much part of their forefronted team now, I think.
Also, he would have solved that big issue which Spurs had, which was the pervasive sense of staleness in 2018-19, 2019-20, because they didn't do the recruitment at the right time. They obviously didn't sign anyone in 2018. You could almost literally see them running out of ideas on the pitch, and obviously when Mourinho then came in, you know, he was basically trying to flog a dead horse. You know, he was using the same players who'd been exhausted over the Pochettino era. So if they had signed Grealish in 2018, I think it would have completely lifted the mood. And of course, I think it would have been really good for Kane, and it would have solved. He's not a light-for-light replacement for Eriksen, but I think Danny's right about that too. I would have said Grealish, but given that Danny's already said Grealish, Wilfried Zaha, who they tried to sign in 2016, made some kind of hilariously low ball bid, which pissed off Steve Parrish. I think Tottenham were crying out for one more explosive final third player. And I think Zaha would have, I don't know exactly where he would have fitted. I'm assuming in a sort of 4-2-3-1, it would have been difficult if you'd had, he might even have compromised Son. So we don't know in hindsight, but if they'd signed Zaha, I think he would have been fantastic. The other forward who they looked at in 2016 and nearly got, I think, was Sadio Mane, who's obviously turned out to be an unbelievably good footballer.
Nathan will be noting, as will the rest of the listeners, Antonio Conte, of course, is a regular listener, would be now kicking the furniture. None of us have even bothered to think about, you know, defenders. Sod that. Spurs, we're going to buy more and more forwards.
I suppose you could say, shall we say Skriniar then? They were linked very heavily with Skriniar, who I think is now, who is going to PSG for free, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can see why Mourinho was so keen.
I think it's very good Spurs podcasting that we didn't think first.
Yeah,
of all,
that is true.
How could we shore up the defence? No, boring. Yeah, let's get boring. More and more forwards onto the books and see what we can do.
Oh, actually, if we're going to say defender, I believe they were interested in Ricardo Pereira before he went to Leicester City. about 3 or 4 years ago. And given how, you know, the steady decline of the right backs they've had over that period of time, or really since Walker left in 2017.
Not been that steady, has it?
Yeah.
Sort of felt steady.
He would have been good. But yeah, I wouldn't have him ahead of any of the exciting attacking players we mentioned.
Can we chuck one more in then? If we could talk about James Maddison then as well, who I guess similar to Grealish in people's eyes, I think he's probably more sort of more spectacular and less intricate, maybe. But he'd be another one who I think could have plugged a sort of similar void, maybe sort of 2 years later. But Spurs were definitely linked with him. I think even before he went to Norwich. I think when he went from Coventry to Norwich.
Yeah, when he was at Cov, they had an idea of like making him the sort of next Dele Alli. David Pleat's obviously really, really across scouting the best young players in the Football League. And they had a good look at him and they decided not to do it. And he went to Norwich instead. And obviously, you know, it's worked out pretty well for Maddison, but it would have been great if Tottenham had got Maddison or Grealish in the building young. I would have loved to have seen how Pochettino would have been able to develop them.
Yeah, well, we've got a question coming up a little later, I think, about the academy. But that's the other thing, you know, they lucked in with Dele Alli. Now, of course, it's receding into the past now. You know, they haven't had much luck since with signing young players and developing them from outside the club, as the other bigger teams have tried to do. Although I have to say, watching Jack Clarke play for Sunderland, he's found his level, hasn't he? He's helped turn Sunderland into a very decent Championship team, and I like watching him play. Antonio Conte, if he's watching that level of English football, he's not, will have noted that Jack's starting position now at Sunderland is outside of the left back. They kind of start with a six Sunderland and spring from there. This is one for Jack, I think you're Mr. Scott, 1891, after all the blue skying of players that we might get, wants to know about the players who are currently at the club and just any updates on these long-term injuries. International break coming up now. Will we see any of the injured quartet coming back anytime soon?
So I think Lloris is further progressed than Bissouma. I think Lloris should be... I think he's making good progress, and I wouldn't be that surprised if Lloris is back for Goodison Park away, I think it's their first game after the international break on the Monday night. Whereas Bissouma, I think, is a bit further behind. So I wouldn't expect to see Bissouma for those games in early April.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Yeah, welcome back to the View from the Lane and a listener's question special. Me, Danny Kelly, James Moore's with us, so is Jack Pitt Brook. Harry Winks has been saying, this is a quote from him, No one from Tottenham has contacted me, not even the coach. I was and remain totally focused on Sampdoria. Odd that. You'd think yeah, the players who are out on loan would still be in touch with the club, but Harry Winks says he is not. Let's get back to the questions. PT boy, perhaps to bring some light relief to speculation about players we don't have and managers we don't have contracted either, said, who's everyone's favourite bands and what was the best live show anyone's ever seen? Now, PT boy, thank you for the question. I could do a top 20 that would go on for 2 hours, and I'm not going to do that. I'll start with you, James, because Jack and I are kind of bonded over popular music. Do you have a favourite band?
Yeah, I mean, this has been much discussed on a podcast before, but Jack and I were at a Cribs gig, the same Cribs gig in 2005.
That's fascinating. Before you worked on knew each other.
Before we worked for the Athletic. I mean, Jack, how
Southampton
Jack
Joiners.
Yeah, the Joiners Arms in Southampton. Yeah, yeah. So the Cribs like historically have been my like contemporary band. I mean, I'm a massive fan of The Clash as well. But obviously, I mean, I haven't seen The Clash live for obvious reasons, Danny. But the listeners won't know that there is a... You need to move it. I mean, Danny is now moving a big print of a Clash poster.
Oh, wow.
Print my arse. That is an original poster from a gig in 1977 that I pulled off the wall at the De Montfort Hall with my blue punk rock hair and a kind of blue and black camouflage shirt that I was wearing.
That's really cool.
That's a pretty good name.
That's really cool.
There you go, James.
That's good. Talk to me about seeing The Clash, Danny.
They were, in terms of rock and roll bands, at their peak on the White Riot tour when they settled down. And people had got to understand a bit about the punk rock. So the second national tour, the first one with the Sex Pistols, I saw them at Screen on the Green, but the rest of the gigs got cancelled. That tour, the White Riot tour, was like nothing I've ever experienced. The Who, at the height of their powers, playing big stadiums, including football stadiums, Charlton, of course, with the Lasers and all the rest of it. Extraordinarily powerful band. But I was the right age as well. I'm kind of 18, aren't I, when this is all going on. James, they were just incredible. The three at the front, the drummer was so good that the three at the front could all afford to be front men. They didn't need a rhythm section because Topper was so good. And the taut power of it all and the feeling that anything could happen in the middle of a two-minute song and everybody, the sweat and the noise, it was just incredible. I've got to be honest, it transformed my view of the world, which had always been rather dreamy and sort of rural Celtic prior to that, even though I was brought up right bang in the middle of London. I'd always been a kind of dreamy hippie. Seeing The Clash changed me, and I've mentioned many other people as well. And it was fascinating because, like all such things, you cannot keep up that level of commitment for very long. Leicester City, when they won the title, did exactly the same thing. They just wound the elastic band up so tightly that it became irresistible. And that's what I felt like with The Clash. Even the following tour, when Mick Jones had grown his hair out, the elastic band had slightly snapped because of that level of power tension was gone out of it. You're making the hair stand up on the back of my head, obviously, just thinking about those days. Jack, I can't speak about how much music you own or love, but you do have an impressive array of indie t-shirts. Does that indicate your love of music?
Like a lot of people of my age, I don't actually own any music.
No, of course you don't.
I don't own any. I don't own any music at all. I listen to it all on Spotify.
Sure.
The days of having like big boxes of CDs along behind me. My favorite bands are the Hold Steady, I guess. Probably LCD Sound System.
Okay.
Not interesting choices. But,
they're not uninteresting choices, though, are they? What's the gig that's left the longest impression on you? What was your favourite gig?
Last time I saw LCD, they were incredible at Brixton Academy. That was the best I've ever seen them by a distance. And any of the times I've seen Hold Steady at Camden Electric Ballroom, where they play every year, have been brilliant. I don't really have any... Do I have any other good, really niche ones from a long time ago? Not really. Radiohead at Glastonbury in 2017 left a sort of long, deep impression on me. But that's quite that's quite an obvious one.
Obvious is not always the problem people think it is. I'm not going to go. I've been very lucky, haven't I? I suppose I've seen every major artist since the early 70s, and often in extraordinary circumstances, because I've been side of the stage and all the rest of it, because of the job I was doing, and extraordinary places. So I'm not going to talk about Bob Dylan at the Todaiji Temple in Nara, the biggest wooden building in the world. And I'm not going to talk about being member of Public Enemy at Reading in front of 100,000 people. Because of what you said, James, oddly enough, about the two of you being in the same building, if you ask me who my favourite band of all time is, there's a list of 1,000. But if I was put up against a wall, today I would say Sly and the Family Stone between 1968 and 1974, because they've done different kind of work either side of it. When they were the funkiest thing on earth, they were my favourite band. During that time, I went to see them at an extraordinary concert at the old White City Stadium. There was a World Cup match played there in 66. It's right opposite the old BBC building, and now it's knocked down. And it was a ridiculous lineup: the Kinks and Sly and the Family Stone and all kinds of other people. But I later discovered that was the first time that Danny Baker and I, to our knowledge, had ever been in the same building. So that's our equivalent.
Origin story.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's your Cribs moment.
Yeah, that's the Cribs.
Danny, have you ever seen the Cribs?
No, I haven't. Have I failed?
You said you've seen every major artist since the 1970s. Yeah, maybe, and you've not seen the Cribs.
Maybe that's something I'll have to put right. Although I don't suppose they'll be playing in Gregner Manor anytime soon, will they? At the back of Doyle's Pub. Listen, thank you for the question, PT Boy, and it has put into my mind that perhaps all of us here, and Eccleshare when he gets back as well, will do a music podcast called Music is the Healing Force of the Universe. Thank you very much for the question. Now, this is from Bansy Castle. Very funny, very good, Bansy.
Great name.
Yeah, very, very good indeed. He says, can you each do a one-minute elevator pitch to Daniel Levy on why you would be a better candidate for manager than Antonio Conte? Who wants to start? I'm looking for volunteers here.
Yeah. I mean,
No, I can't do one. There is no argument to make.
Just on the basis of what you were saying before, I mean, just repeatedly saying, I actually want to be the manager. I actually want to be the manager
exactly
for
that.
A minute. Yep. Would probably put you in a good position. I mean, look, just to be clear, and I know there is a pro-Conte faction who will be very annoyed just by the question. I don't think I would do a better job than Antonio Conte as Tottenham manager. But I do think that point is quite important. You have to want to be the manager, and I'm not convinced he really does.
Yeah, I would just stand in the elevator in front of Daniel, who I would be looming over, don't forget, by this stage. So his face is level with my chest. Same with you, James, of course. I'd be wearing a shirt that says, I heart Spurs. I'd just be pointing to it over and over again. And when he tried to...
For a minute.
When he tried to look away from me, slightly, you know, embarrassed, I would smacking him on top of the head very gently, like Benny Hill used to do. To Bob Todd, and to get his attention back and just point to it again. I heart Spurs. And that's my job interview to replace Antonio Conte. This is from Mitchell Blanchard. He says, I'm coming to London for the first time, but of course, during the international break, maybe a good thing if we lose to Southampton. Oh, Mitchell, come on. Surely we have to beat Southampton. What's the most Spurs thing to do in London without going to a game? Jack, I guess this is probably pizza talk again, isn't it?
You can do the Skywalk.
I know. Have you done the Skywalk?
You can't be joking.
No, I haven't done the Skywalk.
But surely, in the interest of journalistic curiosity, you shouldn't be doing it, Jack. And surely you should be commissioning
nice
that, James.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jack. Yeah.
Skywalk, Megastore, Chick King.
Yeah, Chick King.
Yeah, Chick King. Yeah.
The beautiful thing here, Mitchell, is that the opposite of the ground, if you've not been before, there is a chicken and chip shop called Chick King that on match days has a queue quarter of a mile long out of it. I don't know how they get through the serving so quickly, but they got the system. But it is the best fried chicken I know in London, perhaps because every time I've eaten, I've been anticipating a football match. And that's no better feeling, is there, than eating al fresco food as you walk towards the floodlights or the glare of the lighting. And so that's probably it. Go to the stadium and hang out. Will Ray, gut feeling only, and I'll accept one sentence on this. Is Kane a Spurs player next season? James, you look like you know a lot of things.
Yes, because I don't think it would be politically sensible or suitable for Levy slash the board to let him go this summer.
So they're going to risk a £90 million loss if he decides to waltz.
I mean, also partly tied into that, I don't think they're going to get, I mean, as we discussed last summer, was it last summer or summer before? It was summer before, wasn't it?
Summer before.
They're not going to get 120, 140 million quid or whatever for him now. The bids they're going to get for him at 30, as he will be by whenever it is, June or July.
June, yeah,
he'll be 30 with a year in his contract. So they'll be getting offers of like 60, 70.
The Casemiro bid, as it's known.
Yeah, and I think with him, it's just to me, like, it's worth the punt and seeing the thing. If they want to keep him, they should just try and just hold him to a year and see what happens.
Jack, what do you think?
Yeah, gut feeling is he stays because we don't know how much Manchester United want him. We don't know how much money Manchester United would be willing to offer. And I think Daniel Levy would probably come down on the side of let's keep hold of him and take the risk that he might leave for nothing. Because as James says, it's going to be a pretty bumpy ride this summer, and I don't think he would want the added unpopularity of selling Kane.
Yeah, and I think, which is my speech for my code for I hope he stays. I suspect unless he's going for a very Premier League inexperienced manager who would just take the Spurs job in any circumstances, Kane staying maybe one of the demands that even Pochettino might make. He can pick the phone up to Harry, can't he, and say what he's going to do. It's impossible with football to know what's going to happen even in 6 minutes' time, never mind 6 months. But my suspicion is that he will be wearing a Spurs shirt again next season. And that is my fervent hope as well. And maybe the last question, we'll have a few words about Southampton on Saturday in a second, though. Last question from all of you who sent in questions, and thank you. I mean, loads of them came in and they were really, really good, and we didn't get to put them out there. Forgive us for that. There's such a pile of them. And Martin says, as the under-18s are in a cup final and on a decent run in the league, who from that crop is seen by the club as the player with the great, or players with the greatest potential to one day play in the Premier League? That difficult pathway from being a brilliant young footballer to signing that contract to getting in the first team. Jack, I know you keep a close eye on this. James is more difficult because he's tied to his desk formulating all the great content about Spurs that you see on The Athletic. Jack, who are the wunderkinds at Spurs?
So I think the best young player they've got is a lad called Jamie Donnelly, Donnelly. He's born in Northern Ireland. He's a kind of, I think I've, when I saw him play, actually, I went to go and see Tottenham under-21s play a friendly at Bromley at the start of the season.
Of course you did.
Because what else am I going to do with my life? Yeah. And he played in that game. He was good. Lots of time on the ball. You can just tell he's a sort of natural footballer. Lots of time on the ball. Very elegant, skillful. I think he was playing in attacking midfield then, but I gather he's also played up front, although I haven't watched him play up front. He's very highly rated. I think he's kind of thought to be the best of his generation coming through at Tottenham at the moment. So one to watch out for.
I've seen that video montage of like all his passing, and it is incredibly Kane. And I mean, I know every striker that comes through the academy, or certainly in the last sort of 7 or 8 years, has been compared to Harry Kane, including Troy Parrott. But it was sort of reminiscent of, and it does make you think, like, you know, if you were the striker in the Tottenham academy and you could kind of peer over the fence and see that, you would kind of copy. You would learn from him.
Southampton is the next game, 3 o'clock Saturday. Funny one now, because of their defeat last night, we're doing this on Thursday, a defeat at home to Brentford, where apparently they played reasonably well, but they got beat 2-0. This has become for them, James, a must win for Southampton. Probably it would have been better for them, for Spurs, if they'd beaten Brentford.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I was kind of following that game yesterday, thinking, you know, it'd be nice if they got like a red card or something after drawing at Old Trafford. I mean, it looked pretty good defence. I mean, I think they actually should have won that game against Manchester United. It seems like they had like the better chances. I mean, look, we've had this conversation like sort of 3 or 4 times in the last few weeks where you've asked me about an upcoming game and I've said they should win.
Yes.
And I think we've had this about Leicester, Wolves and Sheffield United. Mm-hmm. So
why don't you say they're going to lose? And then
I think they will drop points. I think I said on Monday I wouldn't be surprised if they drew, and it kind of sits between the result that they need and the result that would bring about a change in management without wanting to kind of go on about that again. Yeah. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't win. It just feels like, you know, when did they last win two league games in a row? I know that we've been talked about the league form not being too bad, but actually, when have they last won twice?
Well,
in
they
a
must
row?
Have done, because haven't they won five of the last seven?
Yeah, they won four out of five.
Games, sorry, I mean, they've been kind of cup games in between and Champions League. And
oh, without there being intervening cup games.
I could be wrong, but my sense is they might not have won two games in a row since that Preston one.
Jack is doing it, going to his mind palace to find out when this last happened.
They won three games in a row when they beat, Fulham away, Preston away, Manchester City at home.
Okay, fine.
Three on the spin.
Isn't it mad that I was entirely right? Oh, no, I wasn't. They beat West Ham and Chelsea back-to-back as well.
That was also two in a row.
So actually, I mean, it's when
happens all the time. Then, yeah, it turns out it happens all the time.
But when they've not had midweek games, they didn't have a midweek game, so they'll win.
Okay, well,
and now they'll lose because I've said that. So thanks, Danny. Thanks a lot.
Well, I'm glad the way you being a curse has been turned around. I get the blame for that. But any thoughts on the game, Jack? Are you going?
I am going. I'm really looking forward to it. I was chatting to James about this the other day, about Spurs don't have an amazing record in this fixture. It's a shame that the last time they played really, really well at Saints was, of course, the game where Son scored four during COVID at the start of the 2020-2021 season, which I didn't go to. I think the last time I saw Spurs played really, really well at Saints was back under Pochettino. So this would have been December 2016. They walloped Saints 4-1 and they were brilliant that day. Dembele was amazing. Son came on in the second half and scored. Dele was brilliant. Kane was brilliant. So that was a very, very different... I mean, it's a long time ago now. That was kind of, five and a bit years ago. But a very different time. But weirdly, I have a good feeling. I just feel like my sense, and this is going to be... You can throw this back in my face in Monday's podcast after they lose on Saturday, is that the mood has kind of bottomed out now. And they've, you know, there's no point in obsessing about Conte's future.
He's going to be there to the end
and
of the season.
The players, you know, there's a clear target, which is to come fourth. The players are good enough to do it, I think. And I think they're definitely good enough to win this game. Southampton are pretty washed, I think. Famous last words, but...
God.
James is really going to hate me for saying that. But I think Spurs certainly can and should win this game.
Let us remind ourselves, after months of this podcast saying how useless Spurs are and how terrible they are to watch, that in the race for fourth place, if they win at Southampton, they'll go third. Just extraordinary. And, you know, hats off. You can only, the points reflect how where you are in the pecking order. And, of course, somebody reminded me before we came on to do this podcast, Brighton can't stop winning now as well, just to add some spice to an already pretty, pretty tasty gumbo in that third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh and eighth place battle in the Premier League. Listen, guys, thank you very much. Jack, have you got a big piece that you want to plug? What's what you were writing about for us in The Athletic?
So we just published a piece this morning, which is it's about the kind of search for a new manager and how Tottenham should stop. This is kind of a topic we touched on in previous podcasts. Tottenham should stop trying to appoint big name, short term, counter-attacking managers. And finally, 2 years after Daniel Levy's famous Tottenham DNA promise, I think now is the time to go for someone who will not just play that style of play, but also, you know, build on a sort of 3-year view, 5-year view. You know, Tottenham have got some pretty good young players. They're not an entirely old team, although there are some old players in there. And I think it's time to draw a line under the last sort of 3.5 years and try and start again. Whether and this is not an explicit case of Pochettino at all. It doesn't have to be him. It could be somebody else.
That sounds eminently sensible and brilliant. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thank you, James, as well. And Jack's piece there that he's referring to is a reminder again that if you're not already an Athletic subscriber, you should sign up now to read all of the fantastic Spurs coverage as well as everything else that's on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for $1.99 a month for the first 12 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Don't forget too, we need your votes if we're to win this big award. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back on Monday.
The Athletic.